Johnny stood on the floor plate. He made the front blade lift, tilt, and angle, peering over the hood each time to see what was happening. Then he made the blade lift well up.
See that grove of trees over there? Start it toward them. Dead slow.
Turl walked beside the vehicle.
Now stop it.
Johnny did.
Now back it up.
Johnny did.
Now go forward in a circle.
Johnny did. Although Turl seemed to think this was a small vehicle, the seat was 15 feet off the ground. The blade was 20 feet wide. And when it started up, it shook not only itself, but the ground. Such was its heavy power.
Now, start pushing snow. Just a couple of inches off the top.
It was very difficult at first, getting the blade to bite in varying degrees while the machine rolled forward. Turl watched. It was cold. He had had no sleep. His fangs ached where Zit had landed a good one. He clambered up on the vehicle and took Johnny's rope and wrapped it around a roll bar, tying it at a distance where Johnny wouldn't be able to get to it. Johnny stopped the vehicle, ready for a breather.
Why didn't Numph hear me speaking?
Asked Johnny.
Shut up, animal.
But I have to know. Maybe my accent is too bad.
Your accent is awful, but that isn't the reason. You had a face mask on and Numph is a bit deaf.
This was a plain, outright security chief lie. Numph had been able to hear all right, and the animal's face mask had not muffled his speech a bit. Numph had been distracted by something else, something Turl didn't know. And the reason Turl had had no sleep was that he had spent the entire night rummaging through dispatches, records, and Numph's files, trying to get to the bottom of it. Leverage. Leverage. That's what Turl needed. He had found nothing of importance, nothing at all. But there was something. Turl felt dead on his feet. He was going in to take a nap.
I have some reports to write. You just keep this thing going round and practice with it. I'll be out soon.
Turl took a button camera out of his pocket and stuck it on the after roll bar, out of the animal's reach.
Don't get any ideas. This vehicle only goes at a walk.
And he left. But the nap, aided by a heavy shot of Kerbango, was a bit longer than he intended, and it was nearly dark when he came lumbering hurriedly back. He stopped and stared. The practice field was all chewed up, but that wasn't the amazing thing. The animal had neatly knocked down half a dozen trees and pushed them all the way up the hill to the cage, where they were now stacked up. More, he had used the blade drop to slice up the trees into sections a few feet long and slit them. The animal was sitting on the seat now, hunkered down out of the keening wind that had sprung up. Turl untied the rope, and Johnny stood up.
What's that all about?
Said Turl, pointing at the chopped up trees.
Firewood,
said Johnny.
Now that I'm untied, I will carry some into the cage.
Firewood?
Let's say I'm tired of a diet of raw rat, my friend.
That night, having eaten his first cooked food in months, and thawing the winter chill from his bones before the pleasant fire on the cage floor, Johnny heaved a sigh of relief. The new clothes were hung up on sticks to dry. He sat cross-legged, digging into his pouch. He drew out the gold metal disc, and then he reached for the gold belt buckle he had just acquired. He studied them. The bird with the arrows was essentially the same on each one, and now he could read the squiggles. The disc said, "The United States of America." The belt buckle said, "The United States Air Force." So his people, long ago, had been a nation, and it had had a force of some sort devoted to the air. The Cyclos wore belt buckles that said they were members of the Intergalactic Mining Company. With a smile that would have frightened Turl had he seen it, Johnny supposed that he was, as of this minute, a member, the only member, of the United States Air Force. He put the buckle carefully under a piece of robe he used for a pillow and lay for a long time looking at the dancing flames.